Introducing WonderSuite from Bluehost.com, the tool that makes WordPress wonderful for everyone. Website creation is hard, but now with Bluehost, you can answer a few simple questions about your business and goals, and the WonderSuite tools will automatically lay out your WordPress website or store in minutes. Seriously. From there, you can customize your design, pick your brand colors, and add blocks. No custom theme or coding required. You'll get content suggestions that you can keep or revise. And with Yoast SEO built in, we automatically help you get found in search engines. From step-by-step guidance to suggested plugins to an AI-powered help bot, our built-in tools make WordPress wonderful for everyone. Whether you're a beginner or a pro, you can join over 2 million Bluehost users. Go to bluehost.com/wondersuite. That's bluehost.com/wondersuite.
Hey, so before we get started, I wanted to talk to you guys about Disney Plus. Now, I know by now you've probably heard about Disney Plus, the new streaming service that includes Disney, Pixar, Marvel, Star Wars, and National Geographic. With all these amazing brands in one place, Disney Plus has one of the most incredible libraries in the entire streaming landscape, and it's all ad-free. From classics like Snow White to today's blockbusters like Captain Marvel and Avengers Endgame, the content on Disney Plus is truly unparalleled. And if all that isn't enough, Disney Plus even has originals like The Mandalorian, the first live-action Star Wars series. So don't miss out. Go and sign up today and start streaming and tell them Hayes sent you. Welcome to another episode of the Awakened Soul Podcast. It's Hayes. We got a great show planned for you. We got a packed show, I should say, planned for you guys this week. A lot of content. We'll be talking about the Joe Budden podcast situation only because, like, as a podcaster and, you know, someone who not only has followed Joe Budden's career in podcasting, but, like, Joe Budden was one of my favorite rappers at one point. And I think, you know, we'll get into the conversation of that, but it's interesting how, like, some of the things that held back his solo artist career is trickling its way into the podcasting thing. So I'll talk about that. That's during the In the Mind of Hayes segment. And then we got your boy Rod from the Blunt Effect podcast. My little brother is joining the show. This week we'll be talking about J. Cole's new album, J. Cole's place in like hip hop, his legacy, and everything like that. I also will end the show with some talk about the Hall of Fame class and just how that whole thing unfolded. So that's the show that we got planned for you guys this week. And I forgot my manners. If this is your first time following or listening to the podcast, make sure you're following us at Awaken Soul Pop. You can follow me personally at CEO Hayes, at CEO Haize. Welcome to the show. Yeah, that's it. That's all I got to say there. No more setting everything up. We're going to go ahead. We're going to get into our intro music. Then when we come back from that, we're going to jump into my dark and twisted crazy ass mind. I'll see you guys right after this.
The following is a Breaks Media podcast.
You are now listening to the best podcast in the world, The Awakened Soul, hosted by my dad.
In the Mind of Hayes segment. And so, as I said at the opening, we'll be talking about the Joe Budden situation. This is like one of the most interesting things going on right now in the creative space, only because this is so anything that I say here, I want to make sure that I set the foundation that this in no way stops Joe from being a genius in what he was able to do and what they were able to build with that podcast. The fact of like, we always said, if you listen to the Breaks Radio, and even back when Johnny and Ralph were on the Breaks Radio, we always talked about like Joe's rebrand from going from a rapper to a creative and to a content creator specifically has been amazing. It's been huge. It's something that I think we all in that creative space, whether you agree with Joe or not, you look you look up to it in a way, because like what he was able to do with getting an exclusive Spotify deal at the time where exclusive deals like of that magnitude were very rare. Now that you see them being more common, I think Joe Rogan has one and a couple other podcasts have one. Like, that was monumental, right? He broke ground with that podcast, and like especially being one of the first ones from that culture, from this culture, I should say, from this culture that was able to do that, really first ever. Like I said, I may be wrong if it's another podcast like I don't listen to or whatever, but at least the Joe Budden podcast is one of the first ones that I can remember getting that exclusive deal when that was announced. That was huge. And so, you know, don't want to take away from that. But the thing that I want to talk about, so Joe, they came out with an episode of the Joe Budden podcast, which was then taken out and then I think posted on Patreon, which is another smart business move. Like I said, you can't take away from Joe Budden's business acumen. You can't take away from that. And, you know, when that episode got released, I think they said it was up for like an hour. And then, of course, as we know, if it's on the internet, it's going to live forever. And that's probably why it did end up getting posted to Patreon. But, you know, we started getting the clips and then full episodes and everything. And in this, like, he went on quite a rant. And I'm going to play the clip. I know everyone's probably heard it at this point, but just so it's not me paraphrasing and you actually get to hear Joe Budden for it from Joe Budden's mouth, let's go ahead and get into that clip.
Y'all go get it. Change the splits. Change the benchmarks. Hey, y'all go get a deal and bring it back. I'll take less. Not much less. But I'll take less if y'all source it. Hey, y'all go get the advertiser and the integration. Hey, we talk about these deals all the time. You bring it, you eat different. I bring it, I eat different. You niggas ain't brought shit and got the nerve to have y'all fucking representation and ain't been around in 6 years hit Ian phone about something. I won't say what I want to say, but y'all will not continue to treat me this way. Y'all not gonna continue to treat these people this way. Y'all take that fucking dark energy, that arrogance, and that entitlement somewhere else.
PTSD.
I say all of that to say, we gonna do this. Since Rory feels like he has so many options here, somehow he still feels like he's running the show. He still feels like he has choices and options. He feels like he's entitled to more. Rory, you are in breach of your contract, and from this point forward, you are fired, and you're not welcome back. Does anybody in here have a problem that I'm the person that has to say that?
No.
Maul, I'm the person that has to say that. The gall of you to think that you are observing the way that I am.
And so, you know, being Joe is clearly upset, like regardless of whose side you believe or not. We'll get into Rory and Maul and them coming out with the episode too. Regardless of whose side you're on, it's clear that Joe was upset. He was frustrated, and he wanted to prove a point. Now, like I said, I'm going to try to not get into like picking sides. I'm just going to stick to the facts of this. But like when you talk about, you know, when you get to the point of like having to air out the dirty laundry, and then some, I'm not going to play every clip, but like him bringing up how Maul used to live with him. And like, once you start getting personal, like on that level, that's when, to me, it feels like these are more so feelings that have been bubbling for a while, more than just the business, right? This is personal stuff going in there, because in my mind, and as someone who's even worked with creatives and had co-hosts that didn't do as much of the work that I did. That's not a shot. That's the truth. But when it came to me, I took on the majority of that because I asked for them to join the podcast. So I didn't have an expectation of the work being equal. But it can get frustrating at times. And so I don't know if that's some of the frustration coming out now. Like I said, we'll get into Rory and Maul's perspective and their side of the story. But, you know, Joe wanted to paint this picture like of A, it seemed like tearing them down, like on a personal level first, and then linking that back into the business of basically making it seem like they're not smart businessmen. And the thing that is kind of odd to me in this, Joe has been someone that's very boisterous in this creative community of knowing your contracts, knowing things that are going into the business. So if you didn't instill that or make sure and be transparent in that with your boys, like your friends, not just your business partners, but people who were friends to you. And, you know, him saying that, like, nobody ever was checking for Rory. And so this is where we'll get into, like, the back and forth, right? So Rory and Mal came out with an episode. Again, another smart business plan from them. They came out with it on Vimeo, charged $2 for it. But that $2 was going to go far because everyone wanted to hear their side of the story. And so they, on the flip side of Joe Budden, seemed very calm, focused on the business, focused on the facts of it, didn't tear down Joe as a person very often. Now, they did go into some of the things with Joe, but it didn't get as personal, I feel like, on the Joe Budden side. Again, not really taking sides on it. And ultimately, when you have a profit-sharing plan, you have to know the ins and outs. They said it. And in asking that, it shouldn't have been any problems. When it starts seeming like frustration comes out, and this is for anyone, this is outside of the Joe Budden. If you're in a business deal with somebody, and when you start asking questions, if it starts seeming like tension comes from questions being asked, not accusations being thrown, but just questions about the business, where it's being held, the numbers, whatever else. I talk very often about, I more so talk about analytics, but knowing your numbers, not just the download numbers, but knowing the actual analytics, the ins and outs. If it gets to a point to where you're asking that and tension comes from that, that would raise a red flag. That should raise a red flag for anyone, in my opinion. And so this came off when Rory and Mal came out with their side of it. It really came like they had questions about the way that business was ran. Now, where I said before that some of the things that seeming now that we have all this, like Joe has always been somebody who admittedly self-destruct situations. He's very self-destructive. Hell, I think one of his whole albums was talking about his tendency to be self-destructive. And so when you have somebody who is admittedly with that, and when you look at, like, for anyone who's actually followed his rap career, you know, at one point he was Def Jam's golden child. Like, Def Jam thought that they were going to have the next huge artist that they were going to ride out for the next 10 years that was going to be big for them when they got Joe Budden. That relationship soured, I think, by the time of his second album because of Joe, and maybe it was even before then, but because of Joe's hot-headedness, because of Joe Budden, like I said, I want to make sure that I say this because I am a fan of Joe Budden, is a creative genius, but sometimes with that geniusness comes problems. Joe is very narcissistic. When you look at, like, Joe's history outside of, like, music career, his relationships, you know, every almost partnership that he has had some tension because of Joe's self-destructive nature. People in Slaughterhouse have talked about it. They make sure that they still say that he's their brother. Royce da 5'9" has been very boisterous on, like, how sometimes he's the, like, he had to bump heads with Joe to get Joe to realize certain things. So this is something, and this is the problem where when somebody comes out with an initial story, and because of their fandom to that, they take that as truth and run with it. Now, when Mal and Rory came out with their podcast and their side of the story, it started filling in some of those holes that Joe Budden, you know, it seemed like he wanted to talk around things. That's my personal opinion. It may not be yours. Now, the way that all, like, boiled down and end up turning out, like, it ultimately just sucks for the culture, right? We talk about ownership a lot on the Breaks Radio. Joe Budden's talked about ownership a lot. And, you know, he said it was a good run, but then they released the episode, I think, like a day or two later. So it doesn't seem like the Joe Budden podcast is going to be stopping. And it shouldn't. Like, as long as Joe Budden's around and he wants to do it and he can find people to co-host with him, he should continue that podcast because at this point, like, that means something. But when we get into, like, Rory and Mal's portion of it and Joe's seemingly reluctantness to be transparent about the business, where that can hurt at, and this is what, you know, even when Charlamagne kind of talked about it, it's funny that Joe has been someone that's been so open and saying know your deals and talked about business and everything, and now Joe Budden has this network. Now, as a creative, would that make you hesitant to partner with Joe Budden with these accusations and, you know, things being out? What does that now do to the Joe Budden network? We know that, like, there are a lot of, he's built that YouTube channel and that network out with some dope creatives and dope show concepts and everything. But does that cause now people to start wondering and second guessing their business dealings with Joe Budden? Do we see a fall from that? I'm not calling that. I hope not. I hope, like, you would think that that the creatives that work with them are smart enough, and, you know, a lot of them are already established with other shows, that they're smart enough to be on top of their deals, so that way they're protected regardless of how things go. But I think when you start seeing how this kind of fell out or works out, like Joe Budden's criticisms about the Black Podcast Network and that deal with iHeartRadio, Charlamagne, and, you know, Drink Champs, not like it, all that, when that came out, it's like, but you didn't even have your boys back, right? And then, you know, Maul told a story about Joe Budden and Joe, you know, saying, look, I sold it out. Look at the line that I got. And you would, like, no, it's us. Like, regardless of, and there's this big conversation about, like, the name of the podcast being the Joe Budden Podcast. We understand why that is. But regardless, when you work with people, when you have co-hosts that show up every week like you show up, you can't just put that on them. And Mom made a great point. When Joe Budden's music career, he wasn't selling out those arenas. And I think we forget sometimes that what makes rappers so great is the arrogance. How I talked about that all creatives, I feel, have a touch of narcissism. Now, it's more out of control with some of us than others. But if what Maul and Rory said is taken as truth, and Joe felt that the success of the podcast was in part because of his music career, you can't deny that that's a part of it. He was part of one of the best and most respected rap groups in recent memory in Slaughterhouse, even if you don't know Joe Budden's solo career. So, like, yes, he came in with some form of a built-up audience. But you can't say that, like, Joe Budden's album sales to what the podcast was able to do, even if 100% of the people who listened and were huge fan of Joe Budden's music supported the podcast, it still wouldn't amount to that type of success for that podcast. It has to be more than that. And Rory and Maul were a part of why that podcast was successful. The dynamic was part of the reason why that podcast was successful. Now, Joe has replaced them with people he also has personal relationships, so maybe that dynamic on the show continues to go forward. But what questions does that raise for people who want to work with Joe Budden going forward? Do you know, and shout out to Tahoe, who is great for this culture. Tahoe TV, by the way, if you listen to me, I'm sure you guys listen to him. But you know, in his video, he talked about, like, what does that mean for Joe going forward? And, you know, I would hate to see the podcast fail or go down. I don't think that is going anywhere. Like, if it's one of the, like, yeah, he may lose some listeners to this. But this is why I think, for me too, like, and this is where I'll start making an introspective rather than just the Joe Budden. And I want to hear you guys' opinion on this, like, and stuff. But for me, this is why, like, the Awakened Soul has always been so important to me. For people who are like, why do you have so many other podcasts? Like, because I have my own outlet, because I have the Awakened Soul, which is just my podcast, it makes it easier for the Breaks Radio. It makes it easier for the Film Frequency. It makes it easier for my Brother's Keeper. Because if me and JB have any disagreements on something that we want to cover or how we do it, I'm more inclined to give them that. Like, unless I feel like it's going to hurt the show, fuck, if JB wanted to, like, yeah, we did a Bollywood movie. I knew nothing about Bollywood movies, but that's my brother. That's my guy. And because I have an outlet in the Awakened Soul that's just mine, if we disagree on something, if we bump heads on something, I have no problems going with, I trust JB wholeheartedly. So even if it's something that I think may not be successful, I'm going to trust him regardless. But if it came to something that I wanted to do versus something he wanted to do with the Film Frequency, 9.5 times out of 10, I'm going to be 100% fine going with whatever he wanted to do. Because if he didn't want to cover a movie on the Film Frequency that I just wanted to talk about, I have this outlet of the Awakened Soul that I could talk about it. Same with my Brother's Keeper, same with the Breaks Radio. The Breaks Radio, if you've noticed over the last, like, year and a half, especially now that we've added Marquee as well, like, it's taken on its whole new shape. And that's not because of me. That is, I can't take the recent success and growth of the Breaks Radio is 122% because of our dynamic. It's not because of me and my built-in audience that I brought. It's not because of Baylor and his built-in audience. It's not just because of Mary and what and the legitimacy she adds to the podcast by being somebody who worked at BET and Hot 97. It's not just because of Marquee and his amazing music mind, it's a culmination of all of that. And like I said, if there was for a reason something I wanted to cover that they didn't, we gonna go with what they wanted to do. And you know, you heard Joe Budden criticize Maul and Rory for not really creating their own separate podcast outside the Joe Budden podcast. And that really kind of seemed like a, well, if you got your own, you wouldn't be worried about what's going on. To me again. But I hope that these guys now are going to be doing a consistent podcast, because Maul and Rory, A, they have a great dynamic, but Maul is funny as fuck. They do have a certain level of being knowledgeable about things in the culture. Their voices are needed, I think, in this community and in this culture. And, you know, some people disagree with me on that, and that's fine. But I would hate to see people who have now learned what being a creative is to not have it. And ultimately, what I would say is that, you know, we see it all the time. We see podcasts break up. We see people who had friendships for years, when they get into this creative space and try to create something together, it goes to shit. The friendship gets lost or whatever else. Hell, it's happened in me, just to be transparent, with me and AJ. Like, but ultimately, I think that if you have your own on top of what you're doing, it makes the business side of a joint venture that much easier. And so that's just me speaking from my experience. But, you know, that's it. That's all we got for this week's In the Mind of Hayes segment. I really just, you know, wanted to talk about it and work through it overall to myself and everything else. But, you know, ultimately, I think if for some reason the Joe Budden podcast stopped tomorrow, they don't release any more episodes, whatever, that run is one of the greatest runs in this podcast. And podcasting is still relatively in its infancy. Yes, it's been around for, what, almost 20 years at this point. Probably more like 10 or 15. I'm fucking 35. So yeah, probably more like 10 or 15. But it's still developing. But they had one of the greatest runs of all time on that podcast. And, you know, when you look at like Joe's relationships and why they fall out, let's not forget that the Joe Budden podcast started off with Marissa and Rosenberg, right? Was it Rosenberg? And that fell apart, right? And because of some of the same reasons. Joe had beef with one of the members. He fired Marissa when it didn't have anything to do with her. She's come out and kind of course, now people want to interview her and talk about it. Like, you can acknowledge somebody's greatness. You can still acknowledge that you've learned so much from somebody while also taking accountability. Well, not accountability, but for taking into account their toxic nature to a degree. And I know the word toxic has been overused, but their negative sides as well, if we're going to step away from the word toxic. Joe self-destructs, and you know, we'll never know 100% of the story there, no matter how many versions, stories, episodes they come out with. That we will never know 100% of the story, but when you take all that into consideration, there's probably problems and faults on both sides. And very often it's easy, right, when something falls apart, when something breaks apart, to only acknowledge the other person's part in the issue, right? That it's natural, right? It's natural because it's if you're talking and communicating an issue or a problem or a fallout, it's easier and it probably comes to mind first to talk about the other person's part in it. But if you really are honest, you played a part in it as well. Now, maybe the part isn't as big. That can be determined throughout the story, but both sides always play a part in why something falls. And I hope that when people listen to this, it's not just taken as like a blindly Maul and Rory right or blindly Joe's right. The truth is that it's you take all the stories and information in, everybody probably had a fault, whether it's communication, whether they could have been more boisterous or been more stern on needing certain information rather than taking it and ride with it, which is something that, you know, Rory and Maul admitted, especially Rory saying, you know, he kind of just rode with stuff sometimes to keep Joe from flipping the fuck out. And that's never good either. You can't allow somebody's emotional state or inability to handle certain things to make you step back from information that you need. So keep that in mind as well. But that's it during this kind of lengthy In the Mind of Hayes segment. We're going to go ahead. We're going to get into a break. On the other side of this break, you'll be hearing me and Rod. And we'll be talking about J. Cole's new album and career overall. I'll see you guys there.
Being a mom is probably the most rewarding thing that I've ever done. I have my own company, but I'm a mom first.
A younger mom, it's not an experience like any other. When you're young, you're growing with your kid. You're growing into that identity.
developing and creating a community of moms that are basically sharing information with one another so that we could be stronger moms.
Perfect imperfection, beautiful chaos, doing the best you can every day, falling down 9 times but getting up 10. As long as you are led by love, you kind of can't lose.
Moms coming together to share information so that we could be great parents for our children.
Us being the change we wanted to see in the world, Yum came into existence.
What's going on, ladies and gentlemen? We already hyped it at the top of the show. We got my boy Rod from the Blunt Effect Podcast in the building.
Yes, sir.
So we set this up. I think the day that J. Cole announced the album, we set up this recording together. I feel like I've been waiting to get you back on the podcast. I feel like this is a good, fun, lighthearted one to go into, not only to review the album, but because we can kind of talk about, like, especially since now he's talking about, you know, he may step away from music for a while, like J. Cole's ultimate place in the game and everything. And so we're going to start off here because it'd be easy to just jump into the album. Let's set the stage first. J. Cole, amongst rappers right now, where do you rank J. Cole as far as right now?
As far as right now, when you put everything together, he has to be, I feel like he's like a Kendrick. Like, he's on a level that nobody else is on. Like, you got your Drakes, you got your Futures, your Lil Wayne's, you got your megastars and your superstars, but then you have those Jay-Z type rappers, like the Nas's and the rappers that you can't really put anybody else in that lane or in that category but one or two other rappers. And I feel like that's a special category to be in. I feel like that's where J. Cole is. Like, he's at the top of his game. He's one of the, if not the top lyricists right now. I feel like Kendrick is probably the only person that you can even put in that category with him right now, as far as lyricism and just the production of their project. So I definitely think J. Cole is a top rapper. But then again, you know, you got to think of the standpoint from where we are in life versus a lot of these young cats. So, you know, I think that's where it separates a lot of the people that listen to J. Cole. Even though he has a lot of listeners, you still have a lot of these 19, 20-year-old kids that still just have a wide following just because a lot of kids are young nowadays.
Yeah, I definitely think, like, it's funny because, you know, J. Cole had the song Middle Child, and I think that's where he is in the game. If you look, he's sandwiched between, even though, you know, as far as a pure rapper, I don't have Drake ranked high, but if you look at, like, where he's sandwiched between, it's Drake, Cole, and Kendrick. And Cole came between those two. Now, the reason why, and everybody knows this, if you've been listening to me for a while, Kendrick's my favorite rapper, period, right now. But I will say this, taking my personal fave, like, out of the equation, you kind of have to rank Cole maybe higher than Kendrick because he's more consistent than Kendrick. Cole drops every 2 years. Kendrick drops every 3 to 4 years, and he completely drops off the face of the earth.
When
he's not coming out with an album. Between Cole's albums, it's features all over the place, and he kills every feature. So I think, like, and then when you add into the fact that not only does Cole produces his own full albums, he very rarely has features at all. This album, we'll get into it, he has more features than what he had in a while, and he finally didn't produce every track on the album, which I think helped. But, you know, it's rare that you have somebody who can produce, come out with albums, and not rely on features and stay at the level that J. Cole has been able to stay at since, Jesus, I mean, his debut album dropped in 2011, but if you want to go above that, Friday Night Lights dropped 2009-ish, 10-ish, and that was a fucking classic, too. Like, I own Friday Night Lights on vinyl, bro. Like, this shit was hard as fuck to find on vinyl. So, like, it's easy because we've gotten used to it with Cole as far as him producing his own albums, but I think we don't really slow down and realize how much that really fucking takes as an artist, bro.
Exactly, exactly. And I feel like, I really feel like I seen the hunger, you know, like when he first came out with Friday Night Lights. And I don't know if you seen the little, I think it was like a 12-minute documentary he did on this, yeah, on this album. You can see the hunger in him. You can see where he felt like, I know where I'm at in the game. Like, I know how, I know what I've accomplished, but there's just something that I'm missing. Like, it's like, just like Kobe felt on the basketball court when he won championships. And it's just like, you still, like, it's not enough. And that's what I liked about it the most, is the fact that he knows it's accomplished, but he still got that hunger and that fight to still come out with the best production or the best music and try and outdo his last project. Whereas, you know, a lot of people, they just, they have so much music that they've recorded, they just pick songs and put them together. They don't even really try to come up with a concept. And I feel like J. Cole still finds that fire and still finds that desire to come up with a creative concept and always leave some type of gem on you by the time you finish listening to his album.
Definitely, definitely. Like, Cole doesn't take the easy layups when it comes to this music thing, and him keep trying to like one up himself. He really feels like he's in competition with only himself. In the way that I look at it, like, it, there's two ways to go about it. There's one way of being, it can get into a negative space. I use Kanye as an example of that, to think that you're your only competition and you don't have to refine and continually evolve. Or then you have on the flip side of that, J. Cole, where it's like, he knows he's his only competition, but because of that, it pushes him to like continually try new shit. Like, if you listen to KOD and then listen to this album, they almost sound like they could be from two different artists, because he's at a different place in his artistry, and it makes it feel like something special, man. So, I mean, I don't know how you want to attack this album review. I don't want to like go track to track. I really just want to talk about it. But the fact that this album started off with Cam'ron's voice, bro, was so fucking unexpected. Like, that was the last thing I expected at all when I started playing that album.
Even it really was.
Produced by Boy Wonder, but it sounded like an old school Dipset beat. And that shit was fucking, like, that set the vibe for the album. What did you think about that?
Man, bro, when I heard that, I thought Cam'ron was going to rap on it. Like, I was hoping, I'm like, yo, I hope Cam rap on this shit. But he didn't, but it's cool. But when I first heard it, I'm like, oh, shit, like, this is what he's starting it off? This is how he's going to start it off? Like, oh, man, I'm not skipping nothing. Like, I'm listening to the whole album. And I did that. And, I think the album was great, bro. Like, I think that first, like you said, the first song with Cam'ron set it off. He had a couple other songs on there that I really enjoyed. Like, matter of fact, Applying Pressure, that had like a nice Wu-Tang feeling to it,
yeah,
in my opinion. And I fucked with that one a lot, and Let Go of My Hand. That I fucked with that one a lot just because it talks about, you know, just real life situations and just things that regular people go through, which is what Cole has been known for in all of his albums. But I feel like this one was more personal. You know what I mean? I feel like this one, you know, like the last one of 2014 Forest Hill Drive, kind of, I feel like every album he comes out with has that one club song. You know what I mean? He doesn't come out with too many club songs, but he always has that one song that's a radio hit or something. And I feel like this album, I don't know which one it would be, because every one of them is that good.
Yeah, I mean, he with this album, and this is the thing with Cole, like, and why I was glad when he came out with the track list and who was producing what, I was happy that he stepped away from producing every song on the album. He produced 5 tracks on a 12-track album, so less than half. But because I feel like when you hear Cole on other people's music, it brings out a different side of him. I feel like when he's producing his whole full albums, and we know he writes his own shit, like, for, I feel like stagnant usually gets like this negative connotation, but I feel like it starts all like, it doesn't push him, I guess, outside of his comfort zone. When he's rapping on other people's beats, I feel like he gets more experimental with his rhyme flows. And I think that's highlighted on tracks like Amari, which is produced by Timbaland, which shout out to Timbaland on that one. And then, like you said, the Let Go of My Hand shit, like, first of all, he got Black on that motherfucker, and that's my nigga. Yeah. Like, that's just that's one of the people that I love in general. And like, I really feel like Cole bringing out, we got so many different styles of rap from him. You know, people like to label him for some reason is boring. I've never personally seen J. Cole as a boring rapper, but the way that I take that and internalize that is that it seems so effortless in what he does. Like, Cole is always flip styles, but it always seems so effortless with him. And on this album, it seemed like he was flexing his muscle more. Like, shout out to Baylor, who, like, he always calls J. Cole the hip-hop Tim Duncan, meaning that you know he's going to get you 20 and 10, but it's going to, but you won't even notice how he got you 20 and 10, but at the game, when you look at the stat sheet. With this one, I feel like this is that game, if we're going to use that sports analogy, that it's like, you will always remember this. It may not be your favorite J. Cole album, but you're going to remember this album if you're a true hip-hop fan, because it's something special about this one.
Facts, bro. And I think J. Cole is one of the few artists that have that, you know, had that characteristic about him where his music has longevity. Yeah. And I feel like a lot of artists, the difference between Cole and a lot of artists is that their music is just temporary. You know what I mean? You can still go back and bump Friday Night Lights today.
Absolutely.
And it still hit the same way it did when it first came out. Just like you can go back and bump 2014 Forest Hill Drive's KOD. You can go back and bump any J. Cole. And I feel like this album is just another one of his classic albums. Like, 4 years from now, we're still going to bump this, even if he doesn't come out with another album ever, or if he comes out with no more songs, we're still going to bump this just like all the other albums, just like it just came out. And that's what I love about J. Cole, besides the fact that he's from North Carolina and that's where I'm at. But that's what I like about J. Cole, is the fact that he's from North Carolina, because when you think about a North Carolina rapper or a North Carolina artist, you think about somebody like DaBaby or like your Petey Pablo. Like, you don't think about somebody that comes with the lyricism and the style and the flow and the versatility that J. Cole has. And I think that's why he's one of the most underrated rappers, because of where he's from. He's from North Carolina. People don't think about that. If he was from, you know, New York or somewhere like that, then he might be noticed a little bit more. But when people put North Carolina and J. Cole together, the two don't mix. And that's what I love about his style, is because, number one, I like lyricism and I like versatility. So that off gate was just like, you know, it caught my attention. Then the fact that, you know, like I said, he's repping the town, you know, I can't help but to kind of follow him and see where he goes, because he's one of the few that's really putting on in the hip hop community for the South in general, as far as lyricism.
Oh yeah, for sure. I think, like, generally, like, people from the South, like, they don't expect lyricism from them. And then, like, when you get it, people try to, like, sweep it under the rug. Like, for example, like, Sigh High the Prince, one of the best lyricists, period. Like, he talked about how, like, Def Jam was like, what are you doing? Like, give us a trap song. He's like, I don't make trap music. What are you talking about?
Facts.
And then, like, who else I want to use? Big Crit. Like, Crit is a fucking masterful lyricist, right? But people really think about it. It took for Mount Olympus for people to really start realizing, no, Crit got bars. Like,
exactly.
Like, no, Crit has bars. And so it's, for Cole, I think it was different for him because he came out from under Jay. I think if he would have got on any other record label, he would have had a harder path to be accepted for the lyricist that he is. But because of who he signed to, Jay empowered him to just be him. And we saw on Cole's first album, you know, Cole, Sideline Story is dope, right? But I think you could see a young guy who was trying to maybe do what people expected from him more than find his own path. And then literally from that, after that album, everything has been Cole evolving every album after that. So what do you have it like your top three Cole albums? And where does this rank amongst those?
My top three Cole albums, bro, I would definitely probably say KOD would be number one. I still listen to Revenge of the Dreamers, bro. Like, real shit. Yeah. I still listen to Revenge of the Dreamers Part 2, and I think that one was dope as hell. Just because of the features in his own camp, like Boz and all those guys, Boz and Kai. So I like those guys, too. I think Revenge of the Dreamers would definitely be my second one. And the third... honestly, I would probably say The Offseason is the third. Honestly, just because, like, when I first listened to the album, bro, I'm not gonna lie. I feel like a lot of people, they have their different perceptions. When I first listened to the album, I didn't know how I felt about it.
Yeah, I feel it. I got a similar story. Go ahead. I'll get into mine, like, next, but go ahead.
When I listened to it, I was just like, I don't know. Like, I don't know if I like this more than any of his other music that he's dropped, or if it just kind of sounds the same. It didn't sound the same because I could tell his difference in flows on each song. But it, at first, I was just like, I don't know. Like, it's not what I was expecting. I can say that. I was expecting, like, maybe he's going to have a couple. Like, when I heard that that Mike Jones freestyle, I'm like, oh, shit, this nigga going to fuck around and have some crazy shit on here. Like, and then when he came out, I'm just like, oh, okay. Well, I mean, sounds like J. Cole. I mean, it's not bad. You know, it's not his worst. But when I listened to it the second time, I was like, yo, like, this shit is fucking dope. Like, when you really listen to every lyric in every song and how he puts it together, that album is really fucking dope. Because in all of his other songs, he always, like you said, he produced his own music. And it's like, he was just having fun with rapping on top of his own music before. And then when you hear this album, it's like, you can tell the difference. Like you said, he's like, he's in competition with himself. It's like, okay, I got this Wu-Tang type beat, so I'm about to rap like them. I'm about to switch my style up. Or, okay, I got this Dipset type beat. I'm about to switch my style up and rap different on this one. And I got this type of beat, and I'm going to rap different on this one. So he's not always sticking to that same flow like he did in the past.
Yeah. For me, much like what you said, so I'm going to set the stage for this first. So the way that I consume music is that content always comes before everything to me, right? Everything. Like, what are you talking about? Like, so oftentimes with that, the way that I listen to music and consume music, it takes for me to listen to it a few times for it to really sit with me. And a perfect example of that is Damn. Damn is one of my favorite albums of a decade, right? The first two times I listened to Damn, I was highly disappointed by Damn. I was super disappointed by Damn. And it took for me, I think it was on like the third or fourth listen, where I think I finally was able to slow down. I wasn't listening to it in the car. I was like in my house, headphones, just focused on it. And I was like, oh, wait a second. No, Kendrick is talking about some shit here. And so mm-hmm. Then that became my second favorite Kendrick album. Same thing with this. When I listened to this first, I was like, all right, it's cool. I'm like, I had tweeted in like my group chat, I'm like, I'm not overwhelmed, I'm not underwhelmed, I'm just whelmed with this. It's a cool album. I still think I have KOD ranked above this. Forest Hills Drive is my favorite J. Cole album. That's just, it's something about where I was in my life as a man, and that album's place can never be challenged, because it spoke to me where I was at that time. And so I think I have this ranked as Cole's third best project. Like I said, after Forest Hills Drives, KOD, then this. And if you want to add in Friday Night Lights, that shoots up to the number one spot. But I think for me, like, the content in KOD is better, because if you go back and listen to, like, he was talking about some shit that we still don't get talked about very often. Financial literacy, understanding money, like, these are things that we need to have conversations about in our community. And he was rapping about it at a time where, you know, people are now talking about cryptocurrency and talking about Dogecoin, because that's the fad, right? That's what's talking. Mm-hmm. That's what the major thing is. So now people have a new interest for it. And I think for me, with albums, if they're as relevant years later, like, ATM is as relevant nowadays because of people having a renewed interest in cryptocurrency and shit. So, like, if you go back and listen to it, that's just how I kind of consume music. But The Offseason, I think, is going to be one of those albums, though, that I can admit that I probably will like it more and more as the years goes on, because he is being open about where he sees himself as a man on this album. And as an artist. And so, even like you said, that documentary, that 12-minute documentary, like, that shit had me hyped like crazy watching that, because that's Cole in a way.
Hell yeah.
We don't, like, when the way that he was talking about the music, you can tell, like, he felt this one was special. So
yep.
it makes you more hyped for it.
Oh yeah, big facts. And like I said before, like, you could see the hunger. Like, you could hear it and just feel it, like, when you were listening to him, when he was just talking, was just like certain things that he was saying, to, in my opinion, that just made him feel like he wanted, like, this might be his last album. But who's to say that it's not? Like, we all know that he's just like any other artist, like any other creative, and we all have stuff in the chamber. You know what I mean? We all have different types of things that we got going on. So I feel like, will this be J. Cole's last album? Who knows? Like, at this point in his career, you know, he's got Jay-Z as his manager. So he's pretty much making boss moves at this point. He's no longer, you know, at that point in his career where he feels like he has to come out with music consistently to feed the people and to show everybody, hey, I'm J. Cole and this is what I'm talking about. Like, at this point in his career, he's like a Kendrick. Like, he's coming out, except, like you said, he's more consistent than Kendrick. But as far as dropping the music when you want to drop it, pushing it how you want to push it, having the marketing scheme that you want to have, and it's not too, it's nothing, it's never anything too extravagant. It's always like some last minute shit. Like, and I feel like that's what gives everybody the rush. Yeah. Like, when you drop that documentary 3 days before your album comes out, and then you drop the freestyle literally like the same day or the day after, it's like, oh shit, and this album comes out Friday? Oh man, I'm staying up Thursday night. Fuck going to bed. I'm listening to that shit because that's exactly what I did.
Yeah, yeah. And Cole, like you said, Cole is one of the rare artists. It's really, okay, as far as rap, we won't count R&B. As far as rappers, not the greats, like not the all-time greats, but like Drake, Nicki Minaj, Kendrick, Cole, probably Future are the only ones who could drop. They could literally, no press, no anything, drop an album on a random day, and motherfuckers are going to stay up and listen to it. Like, period. And I love where you went with that, too, because, like, we don't talk about Cole as a businessman enough. Because facts. He's not the type of businessman that is going to be front and center all the time. He really puts his artists in the position, and he lets them ride. Unless, like, with the Dreamers, he picks songs strategically. And he always pairs himself with the artist that maybe needs a little bit more shine. And I think even people who aren't necessarily his artists, look at like Reason, DaBaby, Luke. These are motherfuckers that he put on that were all through the last Dreamers albums that needed that rub. And people, like, he did more for Reason to be more publicly known than what TDE has, to be honest.
Facts.
And
facts.
We don't think about that. But Cole as a businessman, let's just look at some of the artists that are underneath him. First off, Earth Gang, which is a fucking dope group.
Facts.
Ari Lennox, who fucking is amazing, right? Kaz.
Facts.
He's not as well mainstream known, but I think for hip hop heads, a lot of them know and appreciate Kaz, because that Kaz and Effect album was fucking amazing.
Yeah, he's got some dope music.
Yeah, and then one of my personal most underrated rappers, period, is J.I.D. J.I.D. is so fucking dope, bro.
Yeah, hell yeah. So it's just definitely dope.
Yeah, I mean, Cole as a businessman, and then that's not even counting in the Dreamville Festival, like, which I need to make it to at some point. I gotta go to one, bro. I can't miss out on another one. Like, so Cole as a business, he's really developed a nice platform and base for his artists and himself, that if he does step away from music, whether it's to focus on basketball or just to focus on getting his artists out there more, the effect that he's had in music is going to be one we continue to feel, whether he's releasing new music or not.
Facts. Facts. I definitely agree with you, bro. He just has, I feel like now he's, especially, it's like when you hang around Jay-Z, it's like bosses hang around bosses. Yeah. And when you get within, you know, a certain group of people or a certain circle of people, you do nothing but pick up on how they move. And I feel like when you have somebody like Jay-Z as your manager, you know, you can't help but to pick up those moves. And I mean, J. Cole is his own artist, his own man. He was already strategic in his own way. But when you got somebody like Jay-Z by your side, and we know you know you got the talent, you got your own setup, you got your own label, so you don't need no capital, you got your own bread. Like, you can do a lot more in this game when you're not, you know, looking for a label to just put money into your pocket and fund the whole thing.
Yeah. And I mean, you don't hear any controversy come out with Cole and his artists either. Everyone seems happy over there. And like I said, he empowers them. Like, I mean, there's so many like artist-owned labels now that sign people and then like they never release a project. Everyone who signs to Dreamville has released music. They're not stuck in development hell where there's like this album that we've been waiting to come out for 5 and 6 years is just never dropping. So like that, it's J. Cole is he's a special talent, bro. He just is, like, overall. And so it's just funny to me when people like we forget. And you know, Earth Gang, I think, actually has an album coming out this year as well. But yeah, J. Cole is a fucking legend, bro. That's all I can say with it.
Hell yeah, big facts. So I got a question for you, bro. What's your favorite song on this album?
Man, bro, I don't know if it's the shock of it, because I'm somebody who can separate my favorite from what I think is the best song on the album. My favorite song on the album is 95 South. Because like you said, the thing that could have made that better is why couldn't Cam at least get 8 bars? Like, let's get
some bars. Something.
Like, I need a remix of this album with Dipset and Cole on it. Like, that's what I need.
Thanks.
From this track. But 95 South is probably my favorite song from this album. What I think is the best song from this album is I love My Life, but I think Applying Pressure is probably what I think is the best song on this album.
Okay.
I think I have to say Applying Pressure. What about you?
I definitely agree with you on the 95 South. I feel like that song is like every real hip hop head is going. That's going to be their favorite song. They're going to be like, yo, that when I heard Cam, when I heard that Killer, I just was like, stop everything. Like, let's listen to what Cameron's got to say. Who gives a fuck if he don't say shit? Like, he know he didn't say shit. J. Cole know he didn't say shit, but it didn't matter. It was just the hip hop history and the aura of just having his presence on that album is what just made the vision of the album. It just kind of already gave you that anticipation. So like you said, I think 95 South is my favorite song, but the best song, I really like Pride Is the Devil. I think that was a good one. Like I listened to that one a couple of times, just listening to the different types of scenarios and how these scenarios are so true. And that I felt like that was probably the best song in my opinion, or either Close. Close was a good one too.
Yeah. Do you think that this album is going to be one that the mainstream appreciates as much? Because listening to this, like, there's not really that many that I can't think of that one song that's going to be like the one that, you, like, Middle Child, you knew that was going to be played on the radio all the time.
Facts.
I feel like all of these songs could be played on the radio, but as far as, like, something that you hear, if you listen to the radio for an hour or two a day, you hear that song get played, like, 3 or 4 times, I don't know if this album has that type of song. And therefore, it's like, I'm so detached from, like, what mainstream listens to nowadays that I don't know. I could be way off base. I just don't see anything being, like, that one mainstream hit off this album.
Facts, bro. And I feel like when I first listened to that album, that I think that's what I was looking for, and that's why I didn't appreciate it. Just like you said, I didn't appreciate it as much the first time around because I didn't hear that mainstream song. And then when I listened to it again, I appreciate it a lot more because it was beyond what the mainstream is. You know what I mean? It was just those little, just appreciating J. Cole for the versatility and the characteristics of him being an artist. And to answer your question, bro, yes, I think, like, I feel like this album would not be appreciated. I'm sorry, no. I said yes, but I meant no. I don't think this album will be appreciated by the mainstream just because I feel like mainstream is all like party music and hype music, amp music, and it's just all about turning up and doing whatever. And I feel like J. Cole didn't talk about none of that in his album, like, and or in any of his albums. To be, you know, to be honest, like, everything he talks about in his albums are always like life lessons or true stories or things that's really happening to him or has happened to somebody around him or has happened to me or you. Because I know every album he drops, there's a song that I'm listening to and I'm like, damn, I'm going through that shit right now.
Yeah.
Like, damn, it's crazy. It's like that nigga's right here. Like, he is every album. So, and I feel like you don't have that with the mainstream. The mainstream is going to play what's going to have everybody dancing in the club, getting drunk, spending all their money and all that kind of shit. And this album is just not that.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. What was your most disappointing track on this album?
Most disappointing, I think I would have to say, I don't know, bro. Like, it's hard to really say that. I don't know if I honestly. I feel like I would have to listen between two. I have to listen between The Climb Back and Hunger on Hillside. Between them two.
Here's my issue with, I have issues with both of those songs, and so The Climb Back, I feel like The Climb Back is a, it's a dope song, right? But I feel like because it was released so long ago, it's like that didn't have to be here, bro. Like didn't that's like song has to be like close to a year old, I feel like, at this point.
Facts.
Like it didn't have to be on there. And then Hunger on Hillside, we got Boss on this album 3 times. He's on 3 different tracks. And I feel like on an album where you don't have very many features, I don't understand why he needed to be on three different tracks. And I feel like this was the by far the weakest one of all the tracks Boss is on.
Facts.
So it's like 100 milli, cool. I understand why that one's on there. Let Go of My Hand, we already talked about it. Got my boy Black on it, so I'm never going to be disappointed in that one. Hunger and Hillside is just like, and then that's the song that closes out the album. And I feel like,
yeah, bro.
I feel like okay. It like, I don't know what you was thinking with this one being like. Track listing aside, I don't mean to be that hip hop head where it's like, because only us hip hop, like true hip hop heads, have conversations about track listing. But the way that you list out the way that the track list plays out is a very important factor in the vibe that people are left with your album. And that, like, leaving it on that one, it was like, huh. It could have been. It's so many other stronger tracks I would have rather this one end on. Like, I think Pride is the Devil would have been a great track to end the album on.
Hell yeah, especially to have Lil Baby at the end. Like, nobody even knew that he was even going to be on the album. So to have that one at the end would have been dope. Or to even have, like, Applying Pressure at the end or Punching the Clock on the end. Yeah. Like, something to leave with a bang. But when I heard Hunger on Hillside, I'm just like, ugh.
Yeah,
like back to work tomorrow. Like, you know what I mean.
And one day somebody needs to have a conversation with the fact that I think Lil Baby, and I don't want to deter the whole episode by talking about this, but I mean, feel free to say what you feel about it. He needs a Most Improved Player award, because when you look at, like, he's a prime example of like how somebody can start off with maybe I don't know if you ever label him as necessarily mumble rap. But he started adding depth into his verses, and now Lil Baby be like, if you listen to Lil Baby when he first started versus now, the style didn't change much. But to go back to it, the content and what he rapped about has evolved so much that it's just like, it's not even the same motherfucker anymore, bro.
Facts. I fucks with Lil Baby. I really not, and I agree with what you're saying, bro. I feel like, especially now, like, I think I consider him a mumble rapper back in like 2017. He was definitely somebody that was not on my list of artists that I'm gonna listen to when I'm in the car. Like, he wasn't. Sure. But I'm trying to I don't even know what album or what song it was that he was on that I forget it might have been a DJ Khaled song or something that he was on that really got him popping and made me start listening to him. Then it was just seemed like he's on every feature, he's on everybody's song, so it's like hard to not even hear him. Yeah. So I mean, Lil Baby's a good artist. I mean, he's definitely one of the top in the game like right now as far as like, you know, coming out with hits and things like that. So I feel like it was good to have him on the album, but I don't know, bro. I don't. Something with that Hunger on Hillside at the end just does not. Yeah. Something with that whole song I don't know. Like, that song just, I didn't like that vibe. Like, I was just like, I feel it. So that by far is probably my most disappointing song on the album.
All right, facts. So overall, I mean, and people are still saying that, you know, because he had teased the Fall Off. Back when KOD dropped as his next album. Now, the offseason came out. Some people are saying we still may get the Fall Off before the end of 2021, so we may be getting more Cole. But what's your final rating for this album? Out of 10?
Out of 10, if I'm being honest, I give it an 8. If I'm being honest, I give it an 8. Just because I feel like I was looking for at least that one radio song. Mm-hmm. And I would have liked to have heard like a J. Cole and a Drake song, or like a another superstar caliber type art. Like, I would have loved to have heard like a J. Cole in the Future. Yeah, like that. I think that shit would have been dope as fuck, bro. Like, but I mean, J. Cole is J. Cole, you know, he's in his own lane. You know, he has his own style. He has his own styles. He's versatile as hell. He's just one of the few artists that can do a little bit of everything. Like, not going to say he can sing, but he can harmonize pretty well.
Yeah, he can harmonize his ass off.
You know what I mean? So, I mean, he's just an artist that's in his own lane. And I mean, I give it an 8 out of 10. I think it's a dope album, but I still feel like there was a couple things he could have done to make it better.
And I'm not too far off you. I gave it about a 7.5 out of 10. And you know, he's still a legend. It's not like saying it's a horrible album. It's not. It's a very good album. It's a solid hip album from a legendary artist like J. Cole. But like you said, like if there would have been something from like, this is, I think that they've like gotten so far past this, but like I feel like the culture needs a Kendrick and J. Cole song right about now. Like that's just needed. Like it's just like that would just feel good right now. And I was hoping like the Little Baby thing was such a surprise. And even I don't know if they changed it on Spotify by now, but when I listened to the album when it first dropped, it didn't list any of the features on the song.
Yeah,
So you didn't know who was gonna pop up on it until you actually was listening to the song. And so like just imagine if that last song would have been like these, like you said, a Drake. Or a Kendrick and Cole or whatever, like it would have been like shit. I feel like that needs to happen at some point. I know a lot of people were waiting for a Cole and Kendrick album that they've wanted to do it. I just think it's the label. That's when you get into the who's gonna get what splits on it and whatever, and that's why that type of shit doesn't happen. But
they need to just do a fucking mixtape or something. That way nobody gets shit. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? You get to choose what songs you want. Y'all can go in and do what y'all want to do and ain't got to worry about none of the politics and all that kind of shit. They act like, you know, it's not a music, you know, it's not a music game now where you can really virtually do whatever you want. Like if you got an album with somebody and the label won't let you drop it, fuck it, we going to do another album, make it a mixtape. You know what I mean? And then they can't do shit because it's free.
Yeah.
I
would like give me a J. Cole and Kendrick. Just give me a 3 album, just crazy drop produced by Hit-Boy, and that's all I fucking need, bro.
Facts.
That should be fucking bananas, man. But fantasy booking aside, man, anything you got left, Rod?
Nah, bro. I mean, I thought the album was great. You know, J. Cole actually played ball today, bro. I was watching that shit a little bit earlier. Okay. Yeah, he didn't do nothing too serious. I think everybody was just kind of like just anticipating it just because, you know, he's always talked about wanting to play pro ball and shit. So back to what we were saying earlier before we ended, I don't know, bro. I don't know if this is going to be the last album he comes out with, because, I mean, he seems like he's not really – he's focus in the music when he wants to be focused. Like you can tell he was focused on this album, but it's not like after this album drops, he's going to be focused on another album or focused on still promoting this album. Like he's got other shit going on. He's got his own sneakers. He's got his own brand. He's actually playing pro ball like he's been wanting to do. So I don't think music is really a priority for him at this point. And I mean, hats off to him, you know, I mean, I feel like that's what these artists should use this platform for, is to move on to bigger and better things and not, you know, just like when people say, when you go to work, you don't go to work to keep working for the same company forever. You know what I mean? Like when you become a rapper, you don't rap to keep rapping forever, looking like Flavor Flav and shit. You know what I'm saying? Still got the clock around your neck. You damn near 65 years old. You know what I'm saying? Like, you don't rap to do that. You rap to elevate and become better and become a businessman. I mean, you got people like Jay-Z and Nas who are perfect examples of that, who came from nothing. And we literally watched them. We were kids watching them grow up from kids, young adults to businessmen. Yeah. So I feel like that's just what J. Cole is for this culture and this younger generation. So, I mean, my hat's off to him, bro.
Definitely. Like, to see his growth from being the dude who popped up on the scene with the fucking unibrow, bro. Like, people forget that. Like, the growth, like, it, like, that he is now. Like, he's this artist now that he's a fucking pioneer, bro. Like, of this generation, he's a fucking pioneer of it. And we often forget that because we still have most of our hip-hop greats, like the Jay, the Kanye's. They're still around doing shit that it's easy sometimes to forget that that generation that came after them are doing big things. And so, you know, Cole deserves that. Like you said, playing ball now too as well. And it's just like, man, hats off to that man, bro. Hats off to
facts. And another thing I can honestly say about J. Cole, something I really appreciate, is the fact that he's remained himself. Like, he's never been one of those. I mean, I know every artist, you know, you got your different types of music that's for different types of group, different types of people, different genres of people that like might like to hear pop or some shit like that. But I feel like J. Cole has never really changed his style. He's never really changed who he was as a person or the approach that he's taken to music in general. And that's one of the things I definitely appreciate about him the most.
Definitely, man. Definitely. Well, Rob, man, give him your social media, man. Let's get the hell up out of here.
Yes, sir. You guys can find me on my personal Instagram at your boy Rye on Instagram. You can find me on the Blunt Effect, the podcast on Instagram as well. Hayes, I appreciate you, bro. Once again, another one in the books.
You already know, bro. We make classics every time we link up, man. That's
period. Yes, sir.
That's period. Y'all make sure y'all go and follow and listen to my boy over at the Blunt Effect podcast, man. We got some other shit in the works that we just need to nail down and just start fucking. Like, we've been trying to nail down dates. We just need to start fucking recording, bro. Like, that's just
true. Facts.
We need to start recording. Motherfuckers just going to just flood their stream. They're just going to start seeing, oh, there's a new one from these motherfuckers.
Yep, every time.
Yeah. So, be on the lookout for that, man. But that is it. This has been another episode of the Awakened Soul Podcast. You motherfuckers know where to follow me at. We out this bitch. Peace.
Peace.
All right, so that was Rod. Shout out to Rod. Great conversation there. I told you guys before we ended, we were going to be talking a little bit about the Hall of Fame class. Now, we had the 2020 Hall of Fame class ceremony. The class of 2021 has already been announced. And, you know, we may talk about that at a later date, maybe on the Breaks Radio, so be on the lookout for that. But this class, a great class, headlined by Tamisha Catchings, Tim Duncan, Kevin Garnett, and, of course, one great and amazing Kobe Bean Bryant. And so I don't mean to like disregard everyone else, because that class is amazing. That is some of the golden standard and era of basketball, in my opinion. That is the era and the players that were coming up the same time that I was growing up. And like, those are that group of people were probably the first group that I was able to be aware of their whole careers from start to finish. Yeah, you know, well, I think Jordan was technically drafted before I was born. I'm not sure. But of course, you know, like there were players that I was alive for their whole careers before then, but that, like, I wasn't aware. And I said, actively following, like, Kobe is around that same time as where he got drafted, where like my basketball, like, love was at an all time high. And like, I got to see his whole career. And I talked about that when when I talked about the episode that I had built around just him and his career after his passing and what he meant to me personally. And so I'm not going to rehash all that, honestly, because it'll get me emotional. But the thing that I wanted to talk about from this class, and like, you hear about it, we talk about it when it comes to music, we talk about it when it comes to film, you kind of always romanticize, but the era that like is your era that you came up with, you always look at that more fondly. I know we talk, like, you hear me talk a lot, like, when it comes to basketball, how like the game is kind of watered down now and all that stuff. And, you know, my kids aren't going to have that same opinion. This current era is going to be probably their golden era of basketball. So I can't take away from that. And I don't want to make comparisons between generations and eras right now. I'm not trying to do that. But for me personally, like, Tim Duncan, I used to always say, was a boring player, right? And you heard me mention him earlier, like, because I talk about how Baylor always compares Tim Duncan and J. Cole. But like, because when you're playing with players like KG, like Kobe Bryant, it's like Tim Duncan was just the one that he showed up. You knew what he was going to do. But now, being older, you appreciate what he was able to do with the fundamentals of basketball and how major his career was and how consistent he was and everything. And like Kevin Garnett, you know, he spoke to the shit talker in all of us, and the fact that he wore his heart on his sleeve every game and for the majority of his career. It's not like he was playing on championship contending teams at all, but like that's what KG and Kobe Bryant, like I said, I have a whole episode dedicated to Kobe Bryant and what he meant. And then Tamisha Catchings, I think that you can't take away, and I know a lot of people don't, unfortunately, watch the WNBA, and that sucks, because the WNBA, for people who just love basketball, sometimes is more fundamentally sound than the NBA. And that may be a controversial statement to some people, but I don't give a fuck. That's how I feel. Like this, there's something special in this class, and especially in like Vanessa and what she said about Kobe, Michael Jordan being there. And I just wanted to end this show with saying thank you to these players, because these are the players that I grew up loving and idolizing and everything. Like I said it, Kobe Bean Bryant was the first player that I hated. And I only hated him because he wasn't on my team. It wasn't a personal level hate or anything like that. I was just like, this motherfucker is so amazing and he's not on my team. He used to kill the Bulls every chance he got. But you know, that's just, I just wanted to reminisce. I just wanted to talk about it. That class is amazing. And it was a night and an evening and a ceremony that, you know, I think I'm always going to remember, for many different reasons. And so a special night, for a group of special players, special individuals that mean so much to, culturally, in basketball and everything else. And, you know, Kobe Bryant, nothing more needs to be said there. So that's it. I just wanted to take some time. Let me know what you guys think about the Hall of Fame class. You know, we'll be getting the 2021 class very shortly after, because, you know, they're kind of catching up. But that's it. This has been another episode of the Awaken Soul Podcast. Make sure you're following us at Awaken Soul Pod. Make sure you send us any feedback, questions, comments, concerns, theawakensoulpod@gmail.com. If you want to leave us a voicemail, you can do so at 614-547-2039. We are the number one podcast for the culture. And this week, we out. Peace.
Out of comments, leave me out of nonsense, speaking out of context, people need some content, niggas trying to keep up, shit is not a contest, whipping bands concept, heaven sent, God sent, at least it's what my mom says, proof is in the progress, money's not an object, busy than a motherfucker, you know how my job get, barking up the wrong tree, you know how the dogs get, haven't fallen off yet, come with a classic, they come around years later and say it's a sleeper, the ears are real, the petty is real, might charge my ex for a feature, deposit the money to Brenda Leticia, Alinda Felicia, she came for me twice, I didn't need enough for her once, you know I'm a pleaser, 42 millimeter, was made in Geneva, yeah, I probably should go to Yeshiva, we went to Ibiza, yeah, I probably should go link with Yeezy, I need me some Jesus, but soon as I started confessing my sins, he wouldn't believe us.
Sins, I got sins on my mind and some M's, got a lot of M's on my mind and my friends, yeah, I keep my friends on my mind. I'm in love with two girls at one time and they tens, that's why I got 10 on my mind. I got M's, got a lot of M's on my mind and my friends, yeah, I keep my friends on my mind. Should repent, I need me some Jesus in my life, amen.
I'm 24, but I love me a threesome. DM a deleted, she my little secret. You tryna dish me to blow up, I peep it. I can't respond, we just go at your people. If I left some rats on the bed, you can keep it. This shit getting deeper and deeper, I dig it. My shovel won't be, and I was broke, had to fix it. A shark in the water, you swim with a luffy. I hit the day, by tomorrow she miss it. I grab a net, she look up, then I kiss it. I'm not a goat, but I fit the description. I like the post, so I get the prescription. We walk around with them bands, and I breach it. This gun ain't gon' jam, and I